Well, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I become a great fan of the Enlifax Problems With Medication Brand Change New Zealand, their website. And on that website, a Brian Pinney left a little quote here from a Dr. Martin Henry Fisher, and it says, "Half of the modern drugs could well be thrown out of the window, except that the birds might eat them." But so I reckon that's a brilliant quote, and particularly as Take It From Us has been focusing over the last two Tuesdays on the scandal, really, the scandal that has affected many, many people with depression and anxiety related to Enlifax. Now, you'll just hear in the background, we're just getting somebody on the phone, Helen Lockett, who is the lead, the strategic lead for the Equally Well campaign, and that's what we're talking about today. So, Helen, you're on the line there, are you? Not yet?
Kia ora, Sheldon, I'm on the line.
Hi,
how are you?
Okay, we'll just confirm and we'll get back to you in a moment. So we've been listening to our theme music from Joe Cocker called Respect Yourself. I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. So today we revisit a campaign called Equally Well, a group of organisations committed to improving the physical health of people who experience mental health and or addictions. And we've got three people in the studio, and all of us suggested that we should all be improving our physical health, doing more exercise. We've got Carolyn Swanson here, who's looking an absolute $1 million with a deep green flower in her hair. It's a pity it's not television. So anyway, people using mental health services have more than twice the mortality rate to the general population. And people with experiences labelled as psychotic have more than three times the overall risk of premature death. Now, if that sounds a bit complicated, what it means is that some with serious mental health problems live 25 years less than the general population. And I'd suggest to you that if that was happening with housewives or All Blacks or rugby league stars, that there'd be an absolute outcry. But unfortunately, in mental health, that outcry, well, it has gathered momentum because of the Equally Well initiative. So we've got Equally Well strategic lead Helen Lockett on the line. Helen helps build the profile of Equally Well with stakeholders and find opportunities to expand and strengthen activities in the mental health sector. And in the studio, I should say that Helen, I believe, is in Christchurch in a flash hotel down there, I believe. We've also got Carolyn Swanson, the service user lead for TIPO, and Caro provides a service user perspective and advises on strategic issues and direction with Equally Well. So welcome to both of you. Helen, you've talked about Equally Well on Take It From Us before. You're still there?
Kia ora, Sheldon. It's brilliant to come back and speak to you. And I'm in my car on the way to the airport, although I'm not driving, so no. And I'm probably not looking as flash as Caro sounds like she is, so I'm sorry not to be with you in person.
She's looking magnificent after a more than little piece of surgery. I think she's given up all the sex, drugs and rock and roll and is looking absolutely wonderful.
Not all of those things.
Not all of those things.
Just some.
Well, anyway, we'd better start talking seriously because whenever Carolyn's around, it's very difficult to be serious. But firstly, to do with Equally Well, Helen, what are the drivers of poor physical health among people with lived experience?
As people might recall from the 2014 evidence review, what we tried to do is split it into a number of areas, because if you're going to try and affect change, you need to help people think about where they fit in it and what they can do something about. So we have focused on six main areas. Firstly, is the things that the workforce issues. So things around the way in which we train and support our workforce. We do that separately. So you kind of get on a mental health training trajectory, or an addiction trajectory, or a physical health general medicine trajectory, rather than thinking about people as a whole person. And there's all the stuff around diagnostic overshadowing. The second area is around the way we've separated our systems at a funding and also geographical level, because mental health and addiction services are so often in a different physical location from general health services. Then there's the effects of psychotropic medications and also methadone in terms of that, in terms of the cardiometabolic effects. Fourthly, there's the fact that many people, not everyone, but many people are living in lower levels of income, having no job, in poverty, poor housing, which again, we know all those social determinants of health affect your physical health and your mental health. Fifthly, we're looking at adverse childhood experiences, so the effects of that on your physical and mental health, and particularly the need to deliver trauma-informed care. And I guess then, lastly, is that whole idea about kind of lifestyle, but Caro will tell you that we chose not to call it lifestyle choice factors, but we talked a lot about that, about reducing exposure to known risk factors. So, exercise, alcohol consumption, those nutrition, those sorts of things. But I want to point out that there are six things, and when you're looking at addressing health inequities, which is what this is, it's very easy just to focus on all the things that individuals can do and start a bit more of a blaming culture. And we've been really clear not to do that within the collaborative, to say there's many things that are affecting this issue and you can do something in your sphere of influence.
I mean, some of those things have really deteriorated, haven't they, for people with lived experience. Housing has become less accessible, it's become more expensive, rents are going up dramatically. They've just had a survey in Auckland to try and get a handle on how many homeless people are living in the city, and I actually volunteered to do that, but eventually missed out some way. So it's not getting easier for people with lived experience, and I've got Caro in the studio here agreeing, shaking her head and agreeing with that. What's your feeling, Carolyn?
Well, I think it's like Helen says, it is a really complicated kind of thing to look at and to figure out how best to address it. But life is hard for people. There is huge pressure on services currently, on mental health and addiction services. Things are tougher, but I think the way that I've kind of worked with Helen around some of the equally well things is to think about, it is easy to blame the person, but in actual fact, life's hard enough when you're facing lived experience stuff without piling on a whole pile more things like housing, getting to doctors, getting to, the chemist, getting to all the different things, exercising, eating right. It's a really complicated issue that has to be looked at from several different angles.
So do you think it becomes overwhelming for people?
And absolutely.
And they just become stymied and, they don't do anything at all?
Well, I think...
I think it's really easy as well to think, I won't talk to this person around reducing tobacco intake, or I won't talk about these other things because they've got so much going on. But actually, there doesn't mean that the person can't look at a number of things, or just be encouraged to think that you believe in the person. So if we think about when someone goes to visit the GP, there are ways in which you can talk about smoking cessation or supporting withdrawal from medication at the same time things are going on, if you're doing that in a supportive way. But it's still someone's choice. But I think sometimes we steer away from it because we think, oh gosh, there's too many things, so we just won't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, we're pretty good in New Zealand at not talking about these critical issues, Helen, I'd have to say, particularly in mental health, suicide rates, domestic violence. Isn't that the reason why we've got the prevalence of these issues in New Zealand?
So I think think what we've been able to do with the collaborative is get people talking, really talk about the key issues that people are facing, help people walk in the shoes of people with lived experience, help pharmacists, GPs, psychiatrists think about their role in and how people might be nervous about going in to see the GP. People know that the meds have affected their weight. There's a sense of embarrassment around those things, and not just assuming people are non-compliant or not interested. You know, and I think we're doing a huge amount in the collaborative to really bust all those myths. And we've got hundreds and hundreds of champions across the country who were doing this work before Equally Well came along. But what we've done is, I think, is given them a bit of a megaphone and an encouragement, and brought a collective group of champions together. And then we found people from all over the health and health-related sectors who are committed to doing things about this and are demonstrating good practice in their field.
How many organisations have actually signed up to Equally Well?
So on last count, there's probably about 130. We don't, we're a very small little backbone team supported by Te Pau Te Whakaara Nui. We just chip away. And so we get endorsements every week. So around just over 120 in the UK. I think they've already reached more than 50 in a month. So I'm sure that soon that they'll be surpassing us. But the point is that people endorse and then they commit to action. So we want endorsements that are action focused. So we don't work hard at getting endorsements. People often go, "I didn't know about that. Oh, I'll endorse." And organisations sign up really quickly.
Yeah.
New Zealand. Yeah, go on, Cara.
Sorry, Helen. I was just going to say one of the really huge things that I think makes an enormous difference with the Equally Well Collaborative is the lived experience voice and how prevalent that is and how to the front of everything and involved in everything.
Right.
I think that keeps it human and real rather than a subjective thing about people that are over there.
Yeah. Well, it's very important to keep it human and real. But, Helen, you mentioned the UK. Are you saying that the establishment of Equally Well in New Zealand has had an influence in the UK and it's set up there as a result of the initiative here in New Zealand?
It's a direct result of what they saw we were doing here. It's not that the UK hadn't been doing some work in this area. They just hadn't necessarily been doing it in a strategic and collaborative way to think about, well, where are the big gaps? Where are people working on? But where do we need to push a bit harder, which is the point of having a backbone team and this idea of distributed leadership is, you know, we need to reach out more to dentists. We need to think about oral health more than we are in this collaborative. You know, and I think that the fact that Australia and the UK have set up collaboratives using the same name can only strengthen us. What we've done with initiatives around the country, but also with Australia and the UK, is we've said, you know, breathe life into this issue in the way that works for you. But remember, there are some key principles. So if someone will say to me, "Oh, we're doing Equally Well and we've got our Equally Well plan," and I'll say, "Well, who are you working with?" And they'll say, "Oh, no, it's just our plan." And I'll say, "Well, that's partnership's one of the key principles of Equally Well and collaboration. So, you know, we can't do these things in isolation. So it doesn't sound very Equally Well to me." So we try and encourage people to think about the shared principles, as Cara said, putting people's lived experience at the heart of making those decisions about designing initiatives, running initiatives and leading initiatives, partnering with other organisations, and making sure these are sustainable. So that's what we're trying to do. Yeah.
It's quite a coincidence that you mentioned oral health there and the need for greater emphasis with dentists and with oral health, because I think a couple of years ago I did write about the experiences of someone very close to the radio show who, as a result of oral health problems, ended up in a coma for 8 days and had complications not only with his mental health but with diabetes as well. So, you know, I can report that he's much better. He's lost a lot of weight. He's moved out of Auckland now, and I believe that he's doing quite well. But, you know, that whole drama and trauma developed from an oral health problem.
Yeah.
And you know, people with lived experience, mental health and addiction problems have much higher rates of problems with their oral health, but most often because of the medications we have to take.
Right.
And, you know, they make your mouth dry and create all sorts of problems.
Well, I think, Declan, if I could ask Declan to make a little contribution there, because last week you were talking about those very things.
Yeah, well, can you just refresh me a moment? Because I had my mind on something technical.
Oh, I see. No, well, you were saying that, you know, the medication dried out your mouth had an impact on
a
particular illness that you have related to that.
Yeah, I've got rheumatoid arthritis with a secondary Sjogren's, and Sjogren's is an autoimmune condition on top of the rheumatoid arthritis, but with the medications and also with the dry mouth as a result of that, you have to drink a lot more water, which I'm very naughtily don't do. But, yeah, it does dry the mouth out, which then leads to more dental problems because you don't have the saliva going through and washing away all the bacteria. So to give you an idea, on a five-minute spit test to get saliva into a test tube, most people get 5 mils in 5 minutes. Mine was less than one. So, yeah, it impacts on that. And that can impact on your mental health as well, especially when you end up going to the dentist 3 times in 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Because two filling, the teeth just become, I won't say brittle, but, yeah.
Well, also has an impact on your savings account.
Yeah.
Well, that's where I would say the medical insurance that I've got, it comes in really, really good because I get 80% back, so it's essential. Yeah.
But that's a privilege that many people may not have. Well, we brought Declan in there. Let's have a music break. Stay with us, please, Helen.
Just going to say, Cara reminds me of Joe Brand in a good way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like Joe Brand.
That as a compliment.
It is definitely a compliment for you.
Sorry you didn't get one, Helen, just saying.
Oh, Helen sounds great. Anyway, she's in Christchurch, so that's a good place to be.
She's got to be a great person if she's in Christchurch and on the mainland.
Absolutely. I've got a track today because Sheldon mentioned about exercise and that in the little blurb that went out in the email. I've got a song here. It's a duet with Phil Collins, and it's called Walking on the Chinese Wall. Who knows how you get up there to start with, but anyway, here is Philip Bailey with Phil Collins and Walking on the Chinese Wall.
Well, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I'm Sheldon Brown with Declan Curran, and we're talking today about the Equally Well campaign. We have Helen Lockett on the phone from Christchurch and Carolyn Swanson here in the studio. Let's just talk a little bit about how Equally Well is promoting those changes in behaviour which are necessary for people to have a better quality of life. Carolyn, would you like to say something about that?
I'll start with something and then Helen will probably jump in. I guess we have to think about what Equally Well is, and it's a group of organisations and people. So there isn't one thing that we kind of promote or do as Equally Well. However, within Equally Well, there's a lot of things that are happening to encourage changes for people that are positive for them. And they're really varied. And I think, as always with things like this, it so much depends on the person, where they're at, what they have available to them, and what they are able to do at that time. I know myself when, you know, I'm in the worst places of overwhelm and, you know, feeling really bad, that the last thing I'm going to do is go for a run, quite frankly. You're lucky to get me off the floor. But at other times, you know, things like that can be helpful. It's the same as, you know, trying to figure stuff out about how you might live differently. You can't really do that so much in a place of crisis. So a lot of stuff's around timing. A lot of stuff's around being more holistic, because the mental health components and the physical health components are separated by services and by processes, as Helen talked about. And that actually has a really dire effect on people. I mean, I have three examples from my own life of physical health problems being diagnosed as mental health problems. And even with this last heart attack and quadruple bypass surgery, that I was under mental health services for a year before that happened. And I know from how much better I feel now that most of that was in fact a physical health problem. I had heart disease, and yet everyone, including me, who's a champion for Equally Well and who has access to all the latest research and stuff, completely missed there was anything physically wrong. And so I think a lot of the things we do aren't about necessarily behaviours, but it's about informing. It's about letting people know what things could be. It's about remembering that everyone needs the same tests. And because this is a global problem. It's not just a Kiwi problem. This is global. And it's appalling. And it affects everybody that accesses services. So
you're saying that the major problem is that our physical health and our mental health are not combined and treated holistically?
Yeah, I do personally. I think that's definitely part of the problem. So a lot of the answers that Equally Well's kind of come up with are different things doing, different organisations doing things but differently, like PHOs funding GP appointments and things like that. Right. Helen, do you want to add?
Yeah, it just, there's several examples of things we're doing, and I think it's really important. At the same time, we're calling for higher levels of routine screening, mm-hmm. And an earlier age, but also that through screening and monitoring of health needs to be really sensitive and respectful of trauma experiences. So that idea of trauma-informed care. So there's no point in encouraging people to come forward and then it not being a good experience. So I think all health services adopting trauma-informed care are actually taking a very Equally Well approach to the way that they're delivering it, because you're encouraging people to come through, you're taking into account past experiences and being sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. We've had a major impact on cardiovascular disease screening. So a big evidence review in partnership with University of Otago Wellington, and obviously Dr. Ruth Cunningham's work with TAPO and also the Heart Foundation, but bringing the age of cardiovascular disease screening down to 25 for people with lived experience of mental health and substance use disorders. And that's in primary care at the moment. So again, that's what I quite like to call Caro might call a heart health conversation. So,
yes.
You know, you don't have to call it a cardiovascular disease risk assessment. You can have a conversation about looking after your heart and what that might do, because it's hard at 25 to think about being 40 and 45. But, you know, we can I've just been talking at the harm reduction conference that's all about reducing that later harm. But I think, as Caro says, we've actually got a load of information out there and increased awareness. And one of the things that Caro said to me very early on is if we could get rid of the culture that you just put on weight in an inpatient unit or when you're prescribed medications, if we could get rid of that culture that just happens and it's inevitable, then that would be a major change. And I do see anecdotally people questioning that in a way that I didn't 5 years ago. I don't know how you feel about that, Caro.
No, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, there was an acceptance that, you know, if people had serious problems that they would have to take the medication that they take, and part of that was putting on weight and all these other things, and nobody talked about it, especially not with the person. And but now I do see people having those conversations but also being more conservative in how they might approach a medical response, you know, a pharmaceutical response to things. So, and much more information for the person as well, which is really important.
But isn't the reality that if we have to take some of these heavy-duty medications for psychosis, schizophrenia, bipolar, that we're going to put on weight, even with antidepressants? So, I mean, firstly, I don't think there are too many prescribers who are issuing a warning about this.
Yep.
The other thing is the incredibly damaging impact that has on people's status, their view of themselves, and this is only one side effect, the putting of weight on. I mean, there are so many other side effects which probably force us to stay on the couch, do much less than we would want to do, because we're not even proud to go out and walk the streets. You know, there have been times when I've really believed that I've had horns growing out of the top of my head, and there's no way that I'm going to go out the front door to walk between lampposts like people tell me I need to do, and maybe do one lamppost one day and then go out again and do the distance between two lampposts and try and progress. I mean, these are major realities, and I'm not sure how we deal with them in an equally well context, Helen.
One of the things we're looking at is going back to basics on prescribing and saying lowest dose for the shortest amount of time possible and keep reviewing it.
And so, full information.
You know, and information at the same time. And in fact, I call them the known physical health impacts of many of the prescribed medications in the context of psychotropic medications. So it's actually thinking that through, giving information at time of prescribing, but also thinking about the alternatives prior to prescribing. So in partnership with the College of GPs, just developed a prescribing for wellbeing toolkit. I'm trying to look at a number of scenarios, again, getting GPs to think twice before writing a script. And that's not a new thing, because there's a whole group of primary care professionals who are calling for that in relation to treating depression and anxiety and bipolar and schizophrenia, but they can now get amplified by the Equally Well message. So we've actually found a whole range of champions that were already talking about that but hadn't thought about it in the context of the physical health, mental health.
Well, you know, that's absolutely wonderful, but I've been pushing on, take it from us, over the last 2 weeks, this scandal, I would call it, with Enlifex and other generic antidepressants. And the answer from prescribers is that if you are having side effects, you should and your depression and anxiety are worsening, then you've got to increase the dosage. Now, I can't believe that prescribers are recommending that they expand or extend the dosage when my understanding would be that the side effects are going to intensify with an increase in the dosage. And surely the responsibility of prescribers should be, as you say, Helen, to prescribe as little as possible to address the mental health issue.
And I think if we, I mean, if I think about the sort of six main action pushes for mental health and addiction providers, prescribing for wellbeing, compliance with current clinical guidelines. So if we look at the BPAC, if we look at the College of Psychiatry guidelines, they'll all say exactly what you said, Sheldon. Yeah. So it's about making sure we comply with what people are trained in initially, which is lowest dose for shortest amounts as possible, keep reviewing, and also looking at other first lines of treatment. And if you look at any of the clinical guidelines that we have in this country, they're very clear about mitigating and managing the effects on people's physical health as well as their mental health. So, you know, it's about adhering to those. But it's also about being clearer about whose role and responsibility things are. So one of the other things within any health inequity is when the system is complicated or doesn't work together, it affects those most in need. And so if you're one of the things that I hear primary care say is when they refer somebody through to specialist mental health and addiction services, it's like they disappear as a person under their patient care. And you don't see that in any other part of the health system. You see shared care arrangements, and we've got to get better at shared care arrangements that work for the person, putting the person in the middle, and work from, you know, and agree those shared care. So otherwise, what happens in all these terrible issues? Every time there's an inquiry about something happens, it's one of the main reasons is that there hasn't been a good shared care agreement, and nobody was checking here, and it wasn't clear whose responsibility it was. And I know that the College of Psychiatrists and the College of GPs, particularly. Are doing a lot more work in that area as part of their commitment to Equally Well.
They're very risk averse, though, aren't they? And, you know, when I was discharged from a service earlier this year, the psychiatrist said to me, well, if you don't take your medication for depression, there's a lot of research which suggests that you will become demented.
Oh, lovely. What a thing to look forward to.
Yes, what a thing to look forward to. And I thought, well, this is blackmail, you know.
Well,
here I am, a radio host. I'm playing competent bridge. I'm still playing tennis at the age of 71. And he's threatening me with dementia if I don't take my pills. You can see my...
still giving me a hard time.
Yeah, Sheldon. And I think one of the things we need to, and you were going to talk to me about the mental health and addiction inquiry. And I think, you know, we're doing incredibly well as a collaborative, which is very sector, lived experience driven. But we could do more with some national directives, some more, so that it's not piecemeal and depending on individuals. So we really want to strengthen that kind of national push to formally recognise people living with mental health and addiction issues as a health equity group, if you like. I don't like the word vulnerable, or I mean priority group is quite a good word, but a priority group for the rest of the health system to think about. When
teams
have their annual plans, they need to be setting out in their equity section what are they doing for the physical health of people with mental health and addiction issues.
And I think one of the other things that have come out equally well that's pertinent to what you were talking about, Sheldon, is that a lot of people with lived experience have stepped up and spoken and done different things in really positive and empowering ways, but also with huge heart. And, you know, some of the stories are amazing. And it starts to turn over that whole thing, because I think what you're talking about, and I felt this too, is that we're not always listened to when we go to the doctor and when we go to our psychiatrist. But, you know, I had the Effexor thing for me, and you know, I buy my Effexor, and I've been really listened to about that with both my GP and my psychiatrist. But I know that's not everyone's experience. So it puts up role models that we are worth listening to, and that it must be a partnership. Yeah. Good healthcare is never a solo endeavour. It's got to be a partnership, and that goes around that kind of lifestyle stuff too.
I raised the Interfax issue with my GP when he wanted to see me for other reasons, and he thanked me very much because he said I can expect to get patients coming in to raise this issue. But he wasn't sure whether Effexor, the branded antidepressant, was available, so he made a call to the neighbouring pharmacist and got confirmation that Effexor would cost me $30 a month to take it. So I think he was very appreciative, and I appreciated that he listened to what I was saying. I mean, this whole Enlifax issue with this generic antidepressant has brought out a huge number of people with lived experience telling their stories on social media. My only worry is that Pharmac and MedSafe are not going to take any notice of this outcry.
Yeah, and I think things like that crop up all the time, and this has been particularly visible this year, and I guess for me too, because it's affected me, so I'm really sensitive to seeing stuff around it. But that's where the good of the collaborative Equally Well stuff is really important, because when we put information like that on, say, Lumio, it goes out really quickly and it gets
Lumio
all sorts
being
of,
your sort of online
platform. Yeah. And anyone can join, just saying.
Right.
It's really fun someday.
Well, we better take a music break. Sorry to just interrupt the singing there, Carolyn. We've got a track by an AJ Cranshaw. I believe that he put this together for Mental Health Awareness Week, and we hope to talk to AJ at a later stage, but I did promise that we would play it today. So we reckon we're confident we've got it here, Declan?
I'm confident. I was just going to say a couple of things that I think it's important to stick with your same pharmacist.
Pharmacists are really important.
Yeah, even though I get my medications and I'm self-managed and that sort of thing, I take the methotrexate, which is for the rheumatoid arthritis, and you're only supposed to take that once a week and balance it with folic acid. And my doctor wrote a script out one time and it said take one daily. If you take one daily, you'll be history at the end of the week. So,
right.
And I was just going to quickly add, when you said you felt like the devil going out for a walk, I'm not selling you any little Lucifer fire starters. And remember that, Ed.
Right. Let's go with AJ Cranshaw.
Yep, he's coming up.
All my time's been thinking of my failings, staring down over the railings. Nobody knows it better than one who's seen the abyss. Nobody said it better to me than like this. Every step I took, couldn't find my way. Been down at times, we're always trying to stand. Reaching into the darkness with both hands. Nobody knows it better than one who's seen the abyss. Nobody said it. Got so much more living to live.
Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And that track, Life for the Living, was by AJ Cranshaw, written especially for Mental Health Awareness Week, which was last week. And I must say, I was very impressed with the media coverage of Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Lots of commentators talking about mental health. And I guess, Helen, that underlines just how mental health has become so much high profile, and I wonder, is that helping your Equally Well campaign?
It's all helpful, and I'm also sure that some of the work that we've been doing across the collaborative has helped other people get on board and think more about mental health and addiction issues. So I think they're complementing one another, and we're certainly just a small part of what needs to change and the awareness raising that needs to be made, but we're a part of that which I think the rest of the health system can really understand and get, because they can, you're saying, well, we'd like to come talk to you about diabetes and supporting people who are living with mental health and addiction issues and diabetes. So I think sometimes it's a bit easier to get an inroad. If I think about those conversations, have been a lot easier than some of the work I do around helping people, supporting people back to employment, for example. It's harder necessarily to have that conversation sometimes in health services. We're doing really well on it, but this has been a lot easier.
Right. So we've got this major government inquiry, which has, I think there's been an announcement that they're going to now, they've got a 1 month extension for delivery of their report from the 31st of October to the 30th of November. And I think that's probably to be expected given the wealth of meetings. I think they had over 5,500 submissions. It did Equally Well make a submission to the government inquiry?
That's a lovely question, Sheldon, because I was delighted that the inquiry secretariat said to me, we've had a lot of Equally Well submissions, and that's because many of the champions and the endorsing organisations across the country put sections on Equally Well issues in their submissions. So that's because we're a collaborative. It's not an organisation making a submission. It's many organisations. We also put something together. I went and spoke with the inquiry team and just kind of just went through some of the one-on-one on the issues, talked about some of the things that could help at a policy level, talked about the fact that we really need the Equally Well issues to go through to the health and disability system inquiry, because that's actually where we can connect with a lot of the wider health system and the health equity issues I was talking about. So, you know, we've got there's a push that can be made from the inquiry around what mental health and addiction services can do. There's also a clear message around what the rest of the health and social care sector can do. But I also want to plug about the fact that housing and employment are crucial in this around physical health and mental health. And I'm sure Caro will say some things around that. But it's easy to forget about those things, isn't it?
Are you happy with the sort of progress that the government is making in terms of housing and Kiwi Build and providing accommodation for people with lived experience?
I'm probably not in a really good place to comment. I think the work that Housing First collaboratives are doing is really great, and it will be really good to speak to them and get some detailed kind of on-the-ground feedback about what's happening for people. I don't know what you think about that, Caro.
Yeah, no, I agree, Helen. I think that's a show all on its own, really.
Yeah, it is. And that's where we have to be, you know, when we look at some of the issues that are affecting people's physical, mental health and addiction issues, we can't separate some of the wider issues. But that's where we need to be in partnership, because there are other people who are concerned about those issues, not just the mental health and addiction sector. So that's where collaboration is really important.
Yeah.
Oral health is the same. Oral health affects people with lived experience and mental health and addiction issues, but it also affects many people living in poverty. It affects Māori and Pacifica people on a much greater level. So we have to think about the collaboratives that we form.
And that's what I like about Equally Well. It's not just mental health and addiction service people or experienced people on there. It's wider than that. It has more of social implications and information. You know, I think that's the powerful thing. It's not another silo.
No. No, well, it must be very hard to monitor, actually, Helen, all this wonderful sort of these wonderful initiatives. As you say, it wasn't just Equally Well making a submission.
Yeah.
It was all of the participant organisations that pressed the message and underlined the message.
And we've got, there's masses of things happening around the country that aren't called Equally Well, they don't need to be called Equally Well, or they are called Equally Well. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily know about them. There's no reason to, because it's a movement. I think one of the lovely examples I'd like to share was people will know, with Sarah and Lumi, I kind of stick some things up there. I never know whether people have heard it or whether they've muted a conversation or, you know, whether they're listening. I get around the country and people tell me that they are listening. And about a month or so later, Elle from Connect SR, she gets in contact, and Connect SR have done this amazing video around changing lifestyles, but it's peer-led, you know. So I'd put something up saying, how are you showing your Equally Well impact? And they thought, oh, yeah, what are we going to do? And they'd beaver it away for a couple of months and got this lovely video out. And I think that's the point I'd really want to make, is when you're looking at behaviour change, you know, peer support has got to be crucial in that. Someone who's gone through and has an understanding of what you're going through and comes to meet you where you're at, you know. And I think that's what I love about the Connect SR video. It wouldn't have had the same essence if one of the medical colleges have made it.
Right.
You know, and that's where what I think about the collaborative is really important.
So that's Connect Supporting Recovery, that operates up on the North Shore and is expanding its influence throughout Auckland. Just help us with this Lumio, because I'm a member of Lumio. Perhaps Carolyn, we could bring Carolyn in here. This is really, you can access this. It's almost like a chat room, isn't it? You can respond to particular questions that might be posted there, or you can put your own.
It's a platform. So there's lots of different organisations and movements and things that use Lumio. So you can join the Equally Well bit of Lumio and you get access to information. As you say, there's discussion topics and it goes through peaks and lows where sometimes you're getting heaps through and other times it's very quiet. But it's been really good for sharing information, for agreeing principles, for places for people to land when they're new, finding out about a lot of this stuff, and some of the naive questions. But there's all sorts of mini groups within it as well. Like we had one for the prescribing toolkit that we sort of got together on, and there's all sorts of different ones around as well. And you participate as much or as little as you want, really.
So Lumio is an online platform that's not exclusive to Equally Well, but Equally Well is using it as a platform to disseminate information and get people's input on a daily basis.
So I belong to four Lumio groups.
Oh, right. Sorry, Helen, you were going to say.
Yeah, I just cut you off. Sorry,
no,
Helen.
It's all right. And I think it's, we use it a lot more around information sharing and discussion, but we've had goes at using it for shared decision making. And we're a big group with a very diverse lot of people. So, you know, I think we use it in a way that's quite different to a lot of the other Lumio groups, but people say it really works. We're also using Twitter a lot more to get messages out there and build more awareness. But I like Lumio for the more in-depth kind of personal kind of connection. There's about 400 people, but it's not a public platform. So people email into Wendy, we can or Rachel, and we can put the emails up on your website, Sheldon, and they can just ask to join. And then we chat around. It's everyone who's committed to addressing physical health.
Right. How much of your day do you have to spend monitoring that, Helen?
I I think the best advice Lumio gave me, and they're a wonderful organisation to work with, is just got to think about it as being in a meeting. You know, people say different things. You keep it going when you need to. It self-moderates a lot of the time. You know, you've just got to trust in that. I mean, I remember one of the in the early days, one of the directors of mental health, one of the DHBs, kind of went up there and went, "Hi, this is my first time on social media." You know, and it kind of is a real leveler. For everyone, and that's what people have fed back. It's a real nice place to have a shared conversation.
Yes.
I think we could again. You know, I see next year as us. We've done an amazing lot of work as a collaborative,
yeah.
But we can really push. We can be stronger, be more focused in some of our areas, and we can bring in some really make sure we're sustaining and getting some of the physical health, mental health, addiction issues into routine. Practice. I think there's a great opportunity with the new Health Quality and Safety Commission service development program that's focusing on EQL issues coming in bigger next year. So they'll be doing some more work across mental health and addiction services. So that's a good opportunity.
So a lot happening in 2019.
Yeah. And the other thing I just wanted to say, since I'm on radio and it's so important, I wanted to mention that Caro said about all the people with personal experience who are about those and making change and speaking in different forums all the time and will increasingly be asked to do things. And I just want to acknowledge people that I work with who are also living with major physical health issues and talking about those issues and talking about how the system can change. And I just think that's phenomenal. I have total respect and humbleness to everyone who will go out there and spend time talking about things that are personally affecting them every day.
Yeah.
Well, the Rākau Rauroa initiative, which is a Like Minds initiative, initiated by Changing Minds, the lived experience group, that seems to be having an impact, and lots of people being trained and ambassadors going out there, and we've had a couple of them on the radio as well. So that's an impressive development.
And we can work in partnership to say, well, what do you want to know around the facts and the figures? You know, help briefings on to those champions so they can go out and speak about some of the things that are happening across the country and share those messages. I think it's a really good collaborative.
Yeah.
Well, I very much admire the whole concept of Equally Well. I think we're probably working in a rather unequal environment in New Zealand, unfortunately. So any way of getting equality back in terms of people with lived experience, I think, is a marvellous development. So thank you, Helen, for your time. We're just going to play a bit of Joe Cocker, and then we'll wrap the show up with Carolyn.
Yeah, I was just going to say there too, one of the visions I've always had when I retire is to set up something a bit like the Golden Girls, but, you know, like to be able to buy something like a motel and be able to have retired people have their own units, all with mental health, that sort of thing. I reckon that'd be absolutely cool.
Well, we've had a couple of Golden Girls on the show today.
Oh, go on. I promised Sheldon I'd sing. I'd play this song for him. It's she came in through the bathroom window. So here it is from John Cocker.
Joe
Cocker. What am I saying John Cocker for? Anyway, here we go. When I push my right buttons.
Says
From us, Community Notice Board.
And I mentioned that the government inquiry has been given a month-long extension for the delivery of their report from the 31st of October through to the 30th of November. It says the extra time will ensure we can do justice to the volume of submissions, which are a total over 5,500, and the volume of information we've gathered over the course of this inquiry. This includes the extensive reflections and ideas many of you have shared with us at over 400, that's 400 meetings since we started our work in February. Our focus now is on producing the inquiry report. When the report is complete, we will deliver it to the Minister of Health. So that's a little bit of an update. You can go onto the website, which is www.mentalhealth.inquiry.government.nz for any further relevant information. I wish that inquiry panel the best, because I think they've collected a huge amount of information. Carolyn, have you got a little comment about that?
No, not a lot really, because I actually missed all of them because I was recovering from my heart attack and surgery, being an equally world champion.
And yes, it's
doing field studies.
Wonderful to see you looking as well as you are. Thank you.
That's us. See you next week.